if you're following along with the Tim Keller devotional, working through Proverbs. I hope that's been a valuable tool for you this year. You know that we've entered in a section of money and work. We're actually going to spend 3 Sundays looking at various aspects of this. I was just thinking, when it comes to work, how much of our lives we spend working, whether we're getting paid for it or not, a great deal of our time is spent working. We spend a good time sleeping, we spend a good time working, and then we eat in between, but that's pretty much, you know, a lot of what we do. And then our managing of money, obviously, has to do with our ability to function, to meet the needs. So really, a really significant topic for us, just in terms of the time we spend in matters related to this area. So tonight, what we want to do is look at the value, you know, what it's really worth, what money and work are actually worth. Next week, Lord willing, bad business. Practices that are common but are bad. They're destructive. They're not honoring to God. And then finally, spend some time the third Sunday on wise strategy and just how we handle work and how we handle money. So tonight we want to look at the question, what's money and work worth? We have two ditches, really. We could take an attitude of, you know, money makes the world go around, it's worth everything, and my identity is tied up in my work, and so I live for money and work. Or I could go to the other ditch and say, no, I'm not like those people, greedy and covetous and all wrapped up in that, and I'm just going to chill and enjoy life, and money and work are really, you know, not where it's at. And as you would guess, the scriptures fall into neither ditch and give us a much more balanced view. So 5 truths we'll look at tonight related to this question, what's money and work worth? Number one, wisdom is more valuable than riches. Wisdom, that's skillful living, is more valuable than riches. It's a much broader category and more far-reaching. Number two, relationships matter more than wealth. Really important truth, because it helps us make decisions when sometimes we're making a choice between what will help our relationships and what will make us more money. It's easy for us to make the wrong decision. Relationships matter more than wealth. And number three, beware misplacing your trust in the insubstantial. There is an amount of security that can be gained with the work that we have and the money that we have, but don't overestimate it. Don't find your sense of ultimate security there. Number four, diligent, consistent work pays off. So we're not going to adopt the view of just saying, well, I'm going to walk with God and pray about it, and I'm not going to worry about working at all. God will provide. And certainly God does provide, but he has designed that one of the main ways he provides, and the usual way he provides, is through your diligent, consistent work. Number five, the blessing of the Lord matters more than anything else. So let's talk about these. We'll, as our custom has been, list any number of proverbs that fall under these categories. First off, wisdom is more valuable than riches. Wisdom's personified in Proverbs 8, 17 through 19. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. So it's not a matter of choosing wisdom instead of riches. In fact, you know, we think of Solomon. He asked for wisdom and God gave him both, right? Wisdom and riches. So we're not
we're not saying that we won't ever have wealth just because we're choosing wisdom. We're just saying wisdom's more valuable than the wealth. That it's actually part of a greater wealth, the wealth of wisdom, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. So when we start off, we just recognize that I'm living for more than the money that I can accumulate, the wealth that I can gather around. It will be part of my life. I'm not turning my back on it altogether, but I understand its relative worth, and that is that wisdom itself, skill in living life that begins with the fear of the Lord, is of greater value. Proverbs 16:16, how much better to get wisdom than gold? If I have to make a choice, let's go for wisdom. To get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. So this helps guide me from making unwise decisions for the sake of accumulating more wealth. So to make more money is never enough of a reason to override things that are more important. Proverbs 28:11, a rich man is wise in his own eyes, but a poor man who has understanding will find him out. One of the traps we can fall into is thinking that because we've been successful in making money, because we've been successful in our business or any number of things, that inherently means that we are wiser than the man who's made less. And the reality is that there's too many other factors in the mix. We may be wise, and often as you get to know those that God has given the ability, particular ability to make wealth, you find out that they are wise in a number of ways and hardworking, and there's a lot you can learn from them. Over the years, as I've worked for wealthier people, and I watch how they operate, and I step back and I go, no wonder they're wealthy. As organized as they were, and as intentional as they were, as well as they planned, and I think I could learn from them just their wisdom of life, whether or not it produces great wealth or not. But I don't want to make the mistake that just because a person is wealthy, he is wise. This is why we don't just make the only requirement for sitting on a board of some organization or some church or some school the fact that a person's wealthy. That's not enough. That may be part of it, but it's not enough. A rich man is wise in his own eyes, but a poor man who has understanding will find him out. So there is wisdom you can gain from people that aren't wealthy at all. And the more that we make friendships with different kinds of people, Romans 12 talks about making sure that we are spending time with the lowly. It's often in those that deal with the pressure of poverty that we find insights and understanding and wisdom about life that we don't gain from people who are living high on the hog. So Keller makes the observation October 25th, wealth has the power to absorb your time, energy, and imagination so that you have too little left to pay attention to more important things. That's something else that I noticed about the wealthy people I worked for them, that they had to spend all their time managing their wealth. And that it was not just a blessing, but it was also a burden to them. No one on their deathbed cries out, I wish I had spent more time at the office making more money. So it's really important not to trash money and wealth as of no value. It has value, but to understand its relative value to other things, that wisdom matters more, that there are other things we're going to see that matter more, and that we don't sacrifice things that are valuable forever on the altar of what is valuable only for time. Number two, relationships matter more than wealth. Proverbs 17:1, better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. And one of the things that we find is a lot of the strife that happens in a family happens over greed. I mean, there's the proverbial reading of the will where the family practically tears each other's eyes out because of who's going to get what. Well, the family is worth more than whoever gets what. And we want to make sure that we're living our life recognizing that relationship matters more than wealth itself. There's wealth in my giving myself to a person. My wife needs time. My children need time. They need me even more than they need my money. And so sometimes, you know, when we're responsible, hardworking parents in the home, we justify a lot of our overwork. We justify a lot of our failure to give our family and friends and other needy people time that they need and effort that they need. We justify it by saying, well, you know, I'm working extra hours for my family. Well, if that's the case, if it's for your family, then don't sacrifice your family for your family. That doesn't make sense, right? So keep the priorities. The relationships matter more. And use your workplace and use your even the working to gain the wealth that you need, use that as a servant of your relationships, not an enemy of them. Proverbs 28:6, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. If getting ahead means that I'm going to violate love for God and love for others, if getting ahead means that I'm going to cut corners and I'm going to cheat other people, we're going to look at bad business practices next time, then getting ahead isn't enough. It's better to be poor. It's better to be bankrupt, as bad as that can be. And it's no great honor to be poor. It's no great honor to be bankrupt, right? None of us would choose that. But that's better than sacrificing relationship and cheating people and treating them in a wrong way. Relationships matter more than wealth. So whether you're talking about your family, whether you're talking about the business that you have, the clients that you have, your coworkers, your boss, your employees, remember that your relationships with those people are going to last many times forever. If they're believers, it's forever. They're not believers, hopefully they come to Christ through your witness, and it's forever. That those people are forever. And the wealth that you're making and the work that you're doing isn't. Relationships matter more than wealth. Christ talks about this when he gives the parable of the unjust steward, where he says, look, use unrighteous mammon, use money to make friends who will greet you in heavenly habitations. Use your wealth in a way that you're channeling it toward building of relationships with people that will be your forever family in heaven and will welcome you home. Number three, beware misplacing your trust in the insubstantial. Proverbs 10:15, a rich man's wealth is his strong city, and the poverty of the poor is their ruin. There is a degree of security and protection that a rich man enjoys. It's like a strong city with big walls. It's how he keeps himself separated from the riffraff and from some of the dangers that those who don't have wealth would end up facing. And poverty in and of itself is not something that we pursue. Sometimes we romanticize it. And I know, you know, I do some artwork, and so it's, you know, the starving artist is romanticized. It's no romance to starve. And art for art's sake it has to be more than art for art's sake, and it's not just for money's sake either, but poverty is not some badge to wear. And it can actually ruin us, and we're going to talk about God's design, how he set things up so that we're dependent on material things and why that would be. On the other hand, there are some ways that we're exposed to greater risk when we are wealthy, and that's what Proverbs 13:8 addresses. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but a poor man hears no threat. It's just not a common thing for people to kidnap the daughter of a poor man. You're going to kidnap family members of the rich man because he is rich. And so, you know, I think it's important for, I think most of us don't consider ourselves wealthy, although compared to many people in the world, we are. But when you look at those that are wealthy, realize that there are dangers and burdens and difficulties that they have, and exposure that they have, and hatred that they bear that you don't have to deal with. And so I don't want to place heavy trust in riches, despite the fact that there's some security there. We save for retirement when we can't work anymore, and we don't want somebody else having to take care of us. You know, that's a right thing to do. But we're still not trusting in that. And we can't get into the mindset that the more money I have, the safer I am. Because it's just not true. In some ways, I'm actually less safe. So Proverbs 23:4-5 talks about another reality. Do not toil, laboring to the point of exhaustion, to acquire wealth. So the point is that your goal of working hard can't be just wealth. This is not what you're living for. Be discerning enough to desist. Live for way more than that. Set your sights higher than that. When your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. The reality is, no matter how wealthy you are, it can quickly vanish. There's any number of ways that it can happen. Where you have a lot of money 1 month, and the next month you have been totally wiped out. It's happened to people many, many, many times. So don't trust in the wealth itself. It sprouts wings. It's gone. And the reality is that the moment that you breathe your last, you're leaving it all behind. Years ago, I talked to a man that lived down in the Irmo area, that was a very wealthy man, built a lot of developments, and he actually confessed that he lived by the basic mantra that he who dies with the most toys wins. And I'm thinking, he who dies with the most toys dies, and he leaves his toys to everybody else. Those of you that have had loved ones die, there's something very sobering about walking into the closet of a loved one, or into the home of a loved one, or the attic, and all the accumulated stuff, the wealth of decades of life that suddenly have become of little value. Perhaps some sentimental value, perhaps some value, but you know, a lot of it goes to goodwill, it goes to the yard sale, and at some point, you know, 100 years from now, nobody's going to even know who this person was except God. And what they possessed, you know, won't matter at all. I often wonder with, because I do Goodwill shopping from time to time, I often wonder whose clothes I'm wearing and wonder if I'll meet them. And what's really funny is how often I'll go to the, you know, the rack there, and I go, oh, well, that looks interesting. I'm kind of drawn toward that. And I realize it's something that I turned in. and it's just a reality check that this, you know, this is not where, you know, we don't live for our clothes and our house and the wealth that we have. That's not what we live for. They are gifts from God that we, hopefully we use it well. But we don't put our trust there. Number four, diligent, consistent work pays off. And God's really designed it that way. Proverbs 16:26, a worker's appetite works for him. His mouth urges him on. Does it bug you sometimes, the fact that if you don't work, you won't eat? That you're so dependent, even for life itself, on whether you work. Do you realize God designed you as a human being to work? Even before the fall, Adam and Eve were assigned to a paradise, an enclosed garden, because they couldn't take care of the whole world, just the two of them. God gave them an area on the planet for them to tend. Fruit trees, rivers, precious stones, gold, a beautiful paradise, but it was a place to work. It was God's design that they would get up in the morning with something to do that had value, and that what they had to do tending that garden would be related to what they ate. So as pedestrian as that seems, as kind of rat race as that might seem to you, do you realize, understand that God designed this, that your work, your survival, your eating are combined. God made you as a person, not just a spiritual being, but made you spiritual and material, and made you dependent not just on spiritual things, but on material things. And God uses that to grow our faith, right? I mean, we struggle when we are in spiritual poverty. We run into all kinds of problems. But you know where God really gets our attention? It's when he knocks us down physically, right? It's when we lose our job and we're wondering how we're going to buy this week's groceries. God uses that to make us dependent on him. And so, rather than being cynical or irritated, realize that God is weaving this together, the physical, material, spiritual, emotional. He's weaving all this together to help us to walk with him. And recognize that in the eternal state, the new heaven and new earth, we'll still be eating. We'll still be working. Because we'll still be human. And we'll still be dependent on him. So don't let what seems very mundane make you think of life as that way. God designed it. Proverbs 12:11, whoever works his land will have plenty of bread. But he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. God gives us abilities. God gives us opportunities. God gives us property that can be turned to advantage. He gives us time. And he intends for us to use our time and our resources well. I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said, do not squander time, because that's what life is made of. God intends that we use what we have well. And we have a very similar verse in 28:19, whoever works his land will have plenty of bread. So you have enough to eat if you just work. But he who follows worthless pursuits will have plenty of poverty. So you've got the lack sense and plenty of poverty. So, you know, you see this principle in school. I remember in high school, you know, we come to a big test, and they've taken the test, and they got their grades back, and they're going, oh, what did you make, and what did you make? And so one person says, oh, I made an A, or I made a B, and they go, oh, you lucky, you made an A or B. And then the next question is, well, how much did you study? Oh, you know, I was really busy and I didn't have much time. I put in about 20 minutes. And the guy who made the A said, I put in 3 hours. work pays off. Okay? And that principle continues. If you work, use what God has given to you, and you'll have what you need. It's his provision. Proverbs 12:24, the hand of the diligent, not just the lucky, will rule, while the slothful, those that are lazy, will be put to forced labor. So be diligent about your work. You know, this starts, and I know we've got the teens down the way, but I don't know if there's any teens in here right now. See, the older teens are college students, but okay. Look, keep up your room. Pick up your socks. Make your bed. Brush your teeth if you want to have them when you're older. You know, these kinds of just practical, diligent things give you, you know, stuff to work with. If you have an ability, if you have a gift, develop that gift. Work at it. It might be music. It might be art. It might be writing. Whatever it is, use what God has given to you. Be diligent about it and see what God will do with it. But if you're not diligent, if you're lazy about that, if you're just sitting around, you know, eating potato chips and watching TV or Netflix or whatever, you know, on your iPhone, checking social media 5 hours a day, you're going to be poor at everything, as well as poor in your pocket. Proverbs 14:23, in all toil, there is profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. There are always people to philosophize about what should be done. There are always people in the peanut gallery critiquing the people in the arena. Get in the arena and work, and it's profitable for you. It's good for your character. You learn new skills. It's not just what it produces in terms of material wealth. It's what it makes you as a person. You know, how many people are given great ability, say in athletics, but they won't run, they won't do the drills, they won't spend the time sweating, and they never become any good, even though they might have more ability than the guy who does get good just from his work. So work with what God's given you to work with, and there'll be profit from it. Don't just talk about it. Don't just talk about what you're going to do. Do something. Keller comments, God is happy in his work, and we are made in his image. No wonder there is nothing more humanizing than good work, and no wonder God rewards it. God is the creator. God is the sustainer. God is at work all the time. Remember what Jesus said? He says, my Father works to this point, and so do I. The works that I do, the Father has given me to do. Look, the works that you do, the works that I do, ought to be work that God has given you to do. We are co-laborers with God. And we have every reason to give good labor and good diligent work for his glory. And that leads to the fifth great truth. The blessing of the Lord matters more than anything else. Proverbs 10:22, the blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. That's really important for me to know. Because when I take shortcuts, and we talk about the bad business practices next week, when I take shortcuts, when I put wealth in the wrong place in my life, when I put work in the wrong place and make an idol of it, I end up adding sorrow to my life. I end up working destruction into my life. When I say things as a believer like, I can't afford to give back to God a portion of what he's given to me, you're lying to yourself. You've been deceived. You're adding sorrow to your life. And that's true of every part of my life where God has given clear direction. I am best served by doing what God wants me to do because I prosper on account of the blessing of God. And if I prosper apart from his blessing, that prosperity is going to bring me great sorrow. So rest in the blessing of the Lord. Serve him. Work hard. Use your wealth well, but recognize who it comes from. And when he gives it, there's not sorrow with it. You know, this is true of so many areas. I think of maintaining our purity as we've talked about, you know, sexual purity and that kind of thing. When people go outside the bounds of what God has prescribed for the sake of meeting some sense of need, they end up damaging themselves. They end up destroying what's beautiful. Whereas when they use what God has given within his bounds, it ends up being a beautiful thing. And this is true of all of life. The blessing of the Lord matters more than anything else. Keller says, a wise person does not do painful overwork, but simply works hard and lets the blessing of the Lord determine how wealthy the work makes him. The fear of the Lord, the intimate relationship the wise have with God, what we talked about this morning, Malachi, is better than fine gold. Wealth is a great good as long as it does not become your summum bonum, your greatest good. Proverbs 30, verses 7 through 9, two things I ask of you, and this prayer is based on this priority, deny them not to me before I die, remove from me falsehood and lying, give me neither poverty nor riches, feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? So that would be the pitfall of putting all my trust in riches and think because I'm rich, I don't need God. Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Whether I'm poor or whether I'm rich, if the result is that I dishonor God, who is the source of my blessing, then I've failed. So he prays that God will make him neither poor nor rich so that he doesn't abuse either. There are times that we face a relative poverty. There are times that we face relative wealth. And our prayer still needs to be that God, let me never deny you. Let me never dismiss you as irrelevant to my life. And let me never do anything under the pressure of the moment that would dishonor you. Because my life is the Lord. My hope is the Lord. Proverbs 20, verse 21, all an inheritance gained hastily in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. It's really important for us to remember that as we are traveling through life, we are traveling through life to a predetermined destination. And we don't want to be short-sighted in the blessings that we seek. We want to make sure that when the end comes, we are blessed. Riches, Proverbs 11:4, do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. I've got to view my life as the dash between the dates. I've got to view my life as heading, as part of history that's heading toward the consummation of the age, when I will stand before God, who holds me accountable for every moment that I live. He gave it all as a gift. And I want to live in a way that I'm increasing the happiness, as Jonathan Edwards said it this way, of the next life. I don't want to be making decisions now that will harm my welfare in the next life. This life is a blip on the screen. It's a vapor. It passes so quickly. Those of you that are older, you know this. No, the younger ones look at you and they say, wow, how long did it take you to get there? Well, it came in a flash. Last week I was 17. And when I say that, usually the younger ones laugh like, ha ha ha, yeah, right. It seems like last week I was 17. And so next week I'll be 100. And the following day I'll be dead. But 1,000 years from now I'll be alive. in a million years from now, I'll be alive. And I'll be part of a kingdom that lasts forever in a world that's way better than this one is right now. So I want to use all that God's given in a way that has the end in view. The blessing of the Lord matters more than anything else. So Keller comments, wealth is an extremely useful thing, but it can give you nothing of lasting value or happiness. And perhaps a corollary to that, wealth is a great tool, but a terrible master. Let God be your master. Wisdom is more valuable than riches. Relationships matter more than wealth. Beware of misplacing your trust in the insubstantial. Diligent, consistent work pays off. And the blessing of the Lord matters more than anything else. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the wisdom that you share with us. God, we're so privileged. Today, we have opened your word and you have spoken to us. And God, tomorrow, may your words be on our hearts as well. May we walk with you. May we be strengthened by knowing that the life that you've given to us on this earth is a life to be used for your glory and to be put to good advantage. Help us work the way we ought to work. Help us worship the way we ought to worship. Help us pursue what we ought to pursue. Help us love you and love others. For the glory of Jesus, who has rescued us, who though he was rich, for our sakes became poor, that we might be rich in him. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.